The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk begins, and we're pleased to be joined by the Senior Director of Broadcasting for play-by-play voice of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Keith. This is not a replay of yesterday's third hour open, but we, of course, have said time and time again, if you aren't aware, Mike was the host of Sports Talk for 9 years, and that, of course, was the tail end of Coach Major's time at Tennessee. And then the start of the Philip Fulmer era, he was also a part of the Vol Network. And so who better to share some memories and experiences with a true Tennessee legend in John Majors than Mike Keith? Mike, how are you?
I'm glad to be with you, John. Thank you for asking me back.
Well, certainly appreciate your time. And one of the things I remember most is that you had so many dealings with Coach Majors, but one of the things you said that you knew you had to be up. He was going to probably talk to you as much about NBA basketball or Major League Baseball. He was going to talk sports with you as opposed to you talking Tennessee football with him, wasn't he?
And Coach Majors had so many interests. You know, he was fascinated by politics. He loved music. He loved all kinds of culture. He liked to talk about the New York Yankees. Yes, he did. He would talk about what was going on in basketball, as you mentioned. He was a huge sports fan, interested in people and places and things. And, you know, for the people who got to have the opportunity to just have dinner with him, they would tell you there wasn't a better dinner guest than John Majors, because he was an expert on wine. He was an expert, certainly, in a lot of areas of conversation, but he always kept it very interesting in every way, shape, or form. So, yes, with Coach Majors, you had to be on your P's and Q's about seemingly anything, anytime.
Mike, one of the things that I appreciated about him and dealing with him is I remember one time he said something to me and I misunderstood. It was, he said either was or wasn't, and I took it the wrong way. And so I wrote it wrong, and I was corrected by that, and I called him to apologize. And you know what he said? He said, you know what, sometimes I get to mumbling, and if you're not sure what I said, give me a call. He didn't go off. He didn't get real upset with me. He just said, hey, sometimes I mumble. I really respected that from his position, because he, not all coaches would have treated it that way.
I said something to a reporter one time in another city that a reporter took out of context in the story and made it a different way, and It did not make Coach Majors look very good. So I got called to Coach Majors' office, and I got my rear end chewed. I explained to myself, but I got my rear end chewed. And in the course of the conversation, Pat, his secretary, walked in and said, Pat Dye's on the phone. And so he said, hang on a second. I said, well, do I need to leave? He goes, no, just hang on just a second. So then he and Pat Dye got into it on the phone, and it was obviously about a player that both of them were recruiting. Coach Majors was not happy about something that had happened, and he let Pat Dye have it, and I could hear Pat Dye letting him have it back. And then at the tail end of the conversation, Coach Majors says, so how's the rest of your family? How's everybody doing? and then he and Pat Dye had a friendly conversation for 4 or 5 minutes, and then they hung up the phone. And I'm thinking, okay. So then he looks back at me, and he goes, so we understand each other. I said, yes, sir. And he goes, and this was a mistake, and you understand why it was a mistake, and you're not going to let this happen again. I said, no, sir. I said, I was a little naive in how I handled this, and I said, I can assure you I will be different going forward. I understand your concerns, and I appreciate you handling it that way. And he goes, well, I appreciate you coming to see me about it. He said, we're good. And then he walked off to brush his teeth. because he had somewhere to be. Because I've got to go brush my teeth. And I mean, that was Coach Majors, yeah. You know, and that was who he was. There was a professional and there was a personal and there was a line between the two. And if he got upset with you, it didn't mean he didn't like you or he was going to hold it against you. And that overall professionalism was one of the things that I thought was most special about him. And when I came over here, I had a chance to see the exact same thing with Jeff Fisher. And that became a mark to me of the people in the business who are really good at what they do. They can separate personal and professional.
Well, and the thing that I always felt about Coach Majors was I think he had a better understanding of the media's job and their role, and he respected it. Not all coaches do, but I thought he did, and he
right.
got it. And that was one of the things that I appreciated about him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he didn't always like what was said. You know, he didn't care for it. He was certainly not a fan of talk shows. He made that very clear. He said to me that he thought a talk show was great for me because I could talk all I wanted, and I like to talk a lot. And, I mean, you can hear him saying that. And that was really okay. You know, he understood that I had a job to do and that this was going to happen. And he understood that I got that he didn't really care for that, but he didn't hold it against me. And he treated me with tremendous professionalism and tremendous respect. And I've said a couple of times today that I didn't play for him, but I feel like a lot of the people who were young who were around his program, whether they worked at WUTK or the Daily Beacon or in the SID office or the equipment staff or whatever you were doing, he was our coach because he took a lot of time with young people to teach them right and wrong about certain things that he didn't, you know, that he didn't necessarily have to do. And I'm so thankful that he took the time to teach me those lessons in those instances. And I know a lot of people listening to your show right now who did a lot of those same sorts of jobs feel the exact same way. We have a lot of great memories of him. And you called me this morning and let me know that he had passed away. And I sat there and drank a cup of coffee and it was sad. But for the most part, today has been a celebration of the way he lived his life and of the memories we have of him. And I think I don't want to speak for Coach Majors because he wouldn't have liked that, but I think he would have liked that most people feel that way today and that they're telling the stories and that they're enjoying the life that he led and respecting the way that he did it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I very much agree with that. Mike, I know that first of all, you have an incredible knowledge of Tennessee history to begin with, and that was before you ever went to the University of Tennessee, just thanks to all that your dad taught you and what you researched on your own. But you were a big part in terms of helping the Ball Network put together the 100 years of volunteers. And I'm wondering, were there things about Coach Majors, either as a player or as a coach, that you learned in helping with that project?
I learned something and I confirmed something. The thing that I confirmed through the entire process, we interviewed over 70 people, I think, for it. Until Peyton Manning arrived, John Majors was the biggest star in Tennessee football history. I'm not saying the best player necessarily. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, but he was clearly the biggest star. His teammates loved to talk about him. And as you talk to fans and broadcasters and media members, John Majors was a huge star. And then Peyton Manning, I would say, has eclipsed him and certainly is more modern, so more people remember him. But Johnny Majors was the dude. 45, that number was a big deal to people. The story that I learned from him, and we spent a lot of time with him on 100 Years, was how much his teammates meant to him, how much he dearly loved them, and how much he dearly loved the Vol fans. And his story to us of the 86 Sugar Bowl and how much he loved it when people would recount to him their stories of the 86 Sugar Bowl. He loved to say, except for their first Christmas or when their children were born or the day they got married, so many people say January 1, 1986 was their favorite day of their entire life. That made him so happy. That pleased him so much that Tennessee football and his football team could mean that much to people. And that was really a cool reflection that he provided that I think showed a lot of insight into how much the man loved Tennessee and loved their fans.
With your vantage point of being a part of the Ball Network broadcast and you talking with Coach after the games were over, what was it like to deal with him at a point in time when, I mean, so much was just fresh and raw after a Tennessee win or a Tennessee loss?
You know, I actually never had that privilege. That didn't start for me until Coach Fulmer.
Gotcha.
Randy Smith was the person who took over that role in 1992 because Bob Kessling had moved on to Jefferson Pilot at that point. And then in 1993, they moved me to the stadium. But I was actually solo at the Vol Network in 1992. And if you can believe this, I got some play-by-play experience that year because you may or may not remember, we had tremendous sunspot difficulties that season overall with various broadcasts for some reason. And so I would have to call plays off of television while they were trying to get John Ward's broadcast back up. And I'm sure Vol fans will remember that's why I was totally unqualified. Because I was having to do some of that. But, yeah, Randy got the last year after Bob had all of that beforehand. And I thought Bob always did a wonderful job with that. And John had done that at different points as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Mike, do you remember Coach Major's description of the field at the Rose Bowl? Do you remember that?
Of his description of,
here's what
totally.
I remember. So they're playing out at the Rose Bowl. Tennessee is playing UCLA. I think it was 1989. So he goes out on the field.
Yeah, that's not what I remember about that night.
Before the game, he said he's talking about the Rose Bowl stadium. He said, roughly, it's neatly tipped and tightly cropped and croply tipped. And I thought, what an explanation of the field at the Rose Bowl Stadium. But he had a way with words,
but I remember that. Yeah.
Talking about that.
Such a history. I mean, there was a thrill to be there and be playing in that stadium that night. You know, and of course, that was the game that put Tennessee football back on the map. The Vols were a massive underdog to number 6 UCLA, and that was the game we did on pay-per-view. I thought you were going to ask about the stupid question I asked him going off the field at halftime, which, as you know, Jimmy, I apologized when you had me and he had me come up and do that speaking engagement. I got to apologize to him for that stupid question I asked him coming off the field. And he just laughed. I mean, it was so much fun to be able to reminisce about the good stories with him because the man had a phenomenal memory.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, a phenomenal memory about some things, but then other things, small things, he would forget. I took his class, his coaching football class at UT.
Oh.
And when I was in there, he would say to me at different points, "Keith, what was the score of this game?" And I would give him the score. He goes, "Yeah, that was the score." He didn't remember the score of games. But he could remember certain plays, certain players, certain blocks, certain calls. I mean, it was phenomenal. Now, he didn't remember the score. But he could remember closely cropped and closely tipped. He could remember stuff like that.
Well, one of the things I didn't think he was given enough credit for as a coach was the way he rebuilt an awful Iowa State program. He rebuilt an awful Pitt program. And when he got to Tennessee was struggling. They were in a downward spiral. I don't know that I thought he got enough credit for rebuilding three programs like that.
Well, and the Tennessee situation was so difficult because so much of the imagination that Coach Dickey had had left when Coach Dickey left. And Tennessee had not put any money into anything, facilities, you know, any sort of modern anything. And when Coach Majors came back, you know, he made the point. He didn't know how down the overall Tennessee program was, not just from the standpoints of wins and losses and players and things like that, but from the standpoint of catching up with Alabama and Auburn and Georgia and all these other programs who had so Florida. Because the thing Coach Dickey did, which was so amazing, is he was cutting edge. He had Tennessee way ahead of everybody in everything, and they had just given all that advantage away. It took Coach Majors, and Coach Majors admitted that he didn't probably have the right staff or the right attitude right away, because he thought he was going to walk in just like he did at Iowa State and Pitt and turn it around. He was in a much more competitive overall situation. It took him a while to hone the craft. But when you look at his last 10 years, I mean, outside of 1988, which was a fluke year, I mean, it was a pretty great run for Tennessee football, which led them to a position where Coach Fulmer took it and elevated it even further. And that was that whole period of time was really an amazing 20-year run for Tennessee football from 1983 through 2002.
Mike, being as much a fan of Tennessee's history in football as you are, is I don't think there's any question that the Majors are the first family of Tennessee football, but what stands out to you when you think about the connection that not only John, but also Bill and Bobby and what the Majors family has meant to the Volunteers?
I think it's because they come from Tennessee, and if you're a Tennessean, then and I've said this before, so I'm gonna repeat myself, but if you're a Tennessean and you have orange blood coursing through your veins, John Majors is in your heart now and forever, because he is what Tennessee is about in the minds of all fans. When you think about a player who represents, a person who represents Tennessee, John Majors stands out. And his contribution stands out. It's so special that he got to come back to town, and I know they were presented with several of his teams at different points, and that he became that rock star all over again in the minds of a new generation of all fans. And whatever didn't end well in 1992, and I know everything wasn't necessarily fixed, but people got to appreciate him for what he was. I mean, the whole thing where he stood up in the section during the Dooley era with the orange britches on.
Yes.
that brought a tear to my eye. And I think it did to a lot of people, because Tennessee football is more than just Saturdays and wins and losses. It's a family, and it's tradition. And it's something that is revered in such a way that it goes beyond the game. It's an experience. And you can't have that experience fully unless you understand John Major's place in the history and his family's place in the history. And we're all better for having known him and watched him and followed him and covered him. There will never be another John Majors, ever.
Mike, thank you so much for making time for us on a second straight day. Very much appreciate your insight, your memories, sharing your experiences with Coach Majors, and thank you so much.
Thank you for letting me talk about someone who was awfully good to me and awfully special.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. That's Mike Keith, Senior Director of Broadcasting for Play-by-Play Voice of the Tennessee Titans. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Making average people feel more attractive since 1876.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Well, it was great, and what the heck do you say about it? You know, it looked like we were out of the ball game. We blocked that field goal right before the half, and it's just a terrific job. It's really what we needed. What do you say? I don't know. It's a great victory.
Congratulations.
I never had a better comeback, I guess, in my whole career. I didn't. The players did, of course.
Well, that was just some of the, as we use a lot on this show, pandemonium. That was raining on the field at Notre Dame Stadium after the miracle at South Bend was complete. Tennessee survived what would have been the winning field goal try by Notre Dame late, and the Volunteers came away, Jimmy, with one of the all-time performances. And I think it could be as high as top three in terms of favorite games of all time for Tennessee football.
Well, I think so. And when I think back to the years that I've covered Tennessee, I would have to put that in there with the win over Sugar and the Sugar Bowl over Miami in the national championship game. But that was a game where Notre Dame jumped out to big lead. I don't remember if they scored 21 or 28 points in the first quarter, but Coach Majors made a comment that at this rate, they're going to score like, I don't know, 80-something points, 100-something points. And then Tennessee was down, 31-7? I think they scored before the half, cut it to 31-14, and they gained the momentum in the second half. And Tennessee just went all out. They were on defense, if I recall this right, with Larry Lacewell, they just reared back and started blitzing on every play and trying to force the action. Notre Dame went a little conservative. And next thing you know, Tennessee's taking the lead, and Jeremy Lincoln, with his rear end, is blocking a late field goal attempt by Notre Dame. That's also a game where one of John Major's brothers, and I'm not 100% sure which one it was, had flown on a private plane to Chattanooga with some of his friends. And at halftime, they said, "We're out of here. We're leaving. We're not watching this. There's no way Tennessee's going to win." And Major's brother was just adamant, "No, we got to stay and watch this." They said, "No, we're leaving." So about the time they touched down in Chattanooga, Lincoln blocks the field goal attempt. Tennessee wins, and Major's brother told those guys, "I will never, never go on another football trip with you guys. I'm done with you guys." So, but I don't know if that was Larry or Joe. I'm not sure which one it was. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Bobby that was involved with that story. But I thought that was pretty interesting. To have your brother there to watch that game, and then the group he's with, they're like, "We're out of here. If you can get your own way home, but we're flying back." And then to see Tennessee rally and win the game.
Wow. My goodness. I don't know, Jimmy, have you seen the statement, the comment made by John Gruden today?
No, I have not. I've actually reached out to see if he can join us tomorrow, but I've not seen his quote.
Here's what Coach Gruden had to say. He said, "Coach Majors had a huge impact on me personally and professionally. He gave me my first job and was responsible for teaching me what the game of football is really all about. He taught life lessons that I still live by today as a husband, father, and coach. He preached that loyalty and hard work are the staples to your success. The amount of players he touched over several decades is endless. He was a heck of a football coach, a great competitor, and truly embodied what Tennessee football is all about. We lost a great, great man, and I will miss him dearly."
Yeah, I knew that John Gruden had a special affinity for John Majors about giving him the job. Gruden was a graduate assistant somewhere around 86, 87, 88, somewhere in that time frame. And actually, Tennessee played against his brother Jay, who was a quarterback at Louisville. I want to say that was in 87. And I remember that John Gruden was on the Tennessee staff and his brother's a quarterback at Louisville, and how that was such an interesting storyline when they played that year. But I did know that John Gruden had an awful lot of respect for John Majors.
Yeah, and I think that's why Coach Gruden continues to speak and always has great reverence for his time at Tennessee. Where he also met Mrs. Gruden.
yes, he did. So, and there are a lot of people that are chiming in on that. I've looked at social media more now than I typically do, and I've read so many responses, so many great tributes to Coach Majors, well-deserved. It's nice to see that kind of response for a guy who is a legend at the University of Tennessee.
And, of course, we will continue, and we look forward to hearing what our good friend Charles Davis has to say as the Ball for Life will join us next. With Jimmy Himes, I'm John Wilkerson. Sports Talk rolls on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues on a day we celebrate John Majors. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. And, Jimmy, once again, we are blessed with another incredible presence who joins us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.
Well, we do. It's a longtime friend. He's the guy that was on the Tennessee football team back when I first started covering him in 1985. He was the guy that you always went to get great quotes. And we look forward to some quotes from him today about John Majors, and that is Charles Davis. Charles, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Jimmy and John. It's good to hear your voices. I hope you and your families are well, and everyone who can hear my voice is continuing to stay safe and stay healthy. And you know, with this turbulent time in our world with COVID, so many things, I'm wishing all the best for everyone out there, obviously. But, it's a tough day. Now, if you played for John Majors, coach for him, we're around him, this is going to be a tough day for us.
Yeah, it is a tough day. When somebody mentions the name of Coach John Majors, what comes to mind for you?
Well, immediately you get scared. I mean, you're like, oh, is he here? Is he here? You know, that's the first thing. And you're wondering if he's going to get into your drill and tell you how you're doing things wrong and how you got to shape it up. And, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, it's funny how his name gets mentioned, and every thought that comes to your head is in his voice. And then you find yourself doing his voice. It's one of those things, you know, there are people in this world that are like that, right? You know, I had a boss when I worked at the Olympic Committee who's one of my mentors, Dr. Harvey W. Schiller.
Yeah.
And I can be with people that I worked with back then, and his name comes up, and you see an unconscious shifting where we all straighten up in our chairs, our eyes start darting around like he's going to come around the corner. You know, I remember a colleague of mine, she said, every time I hear his name, I just have that immediate spasm of fear. But doesn't mean we didn't love him. Doesn't mean we didn't, you know, appreciate what he did for us, all of those things. With Coach Majors, you know, it's been funny because, as you might imagine, you know, the text messages, the calls, you know, we're all doing that today, right? We're all looking for comfort with each other, making sure, you know, all of ours are doing okay, handling the news, got the news, all that. And then the stories start. And you guys know, I mean, you've been around a lot, and you've got your own set of stories as well. But, you know, some of the stories you've heard, some of them have been new to emerge. I mean, it's been a heck of a day. So I think that's the way we've tried to get through a lot of this.
You said that you could safely say that playing for Johnny Majors is one of the greatest experiences of my life. Why?
Yeah. You got to understand, and I'll try for once in my life to be somewhat brief. I was born in East Tennessee, right? Elizabethan, Tennessee. My mom's from there. My dad's from West Virginia, okay? Tennessee had a big imprint on me, even though I didn't live there. We moved to New York State when I was two, but all my mom's relatives, we'd go back and forth. The name Majors very quickly is always followed by Tennessee. If you say the word Tennessee in the context, especially of football, the name Majors comes up very quickly. He was a giant before I ever met him, okay, before I ever knew who he was. So that was a big part of it. Then I get to go and play for him, all right? So now, wow, this is unbelievable because it was a lifelong dream for me to play at Tennessee, especially once Coach Majors left Pitt. Because you have to remember, growing up in New York State, I got to see Pitt play a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Eastern football, this is before the Big East, right? We didn't, you know, Penn State hadn't gone and joined the Big Ten. This is long before any of that. So Eastern football, when Pitt got good and now could challenge Penn State and beat Penn State and Tony Dorsett,
yep,
as Coach Majors used to call him, Tony Dorsett, you know, before he changed his name, you know, that was a big deal. So to watch that and see that all evolve, and then, of course, he went back to his alma mater, which I was thrilled about because I always wanted to be a Tennessee player. But bottom line is, guys, once I got there and went through everything, and, yes, you know, there's times like any coach, you're like, what am I doing playing for this maniac? You also realize the lessons that were there, the care that he actually had for you, even though there's times you were wondering about that. And, of course, we were able to accomplish something with him that he was brought back to do, and we were a part of that first group to get that done, which was win the SEC and win the Sugar Bowl, because that's what he was brought back to get done. He got called home just like Coach Bryant did, right? Coach Bryant said he left Texas A&M because Bama called. If you were really in your right mind looking at the rebuild job that faced him at Tennessee versus what he had left at Pitt, would you have left? No. Jackie Sherrill was very happy that that went down like that, because Jackie Sherrill took over, and I'm not saying that he didn't do a good job, but Coach Sherrill was a heck of a coach. We know that. He took Mississippi State to an SEC championship game. Come on now. Man knows what he's doing. But he took over a loaded program, and I think he went 33-3-1 before he left for Texas A&M. So Coach Majors could have very well stayed there and ridden that out. And who knows? With any luck, maybe he wins another national title.
Charles, it is great to catch up. And I'm just wondering, we got to speak with David Moon earlier, and he talked about this.
David.
But how different was the relationship player to coach, and then to get to know Coach Majors after your time was done, and really be more friends than it was? And now I realize you're always player and coach, but I'm just wondering, what was it like for the relationship to evolve the way it did over time?
Yeah, I have no idea what David said, but I think I have a decent idea of it. And what it is you see some of that, you get glimpses of it as a player, if you are doing the right things, right? And he's not having to, you know, discipline you, or you're not a problem in the classroom and things of that nature. So you get glimpses of it where he would share that side of him about what he was reading lately. You know, have you read this? Have you read this, young man? This is great stuff. And then, of course, he wanted to make sure he gave you information that you didn't know so that you would know that he had read it. You know what I mean? So where they got that from? And let me tell you how this all came about. And you're like, okay, got it. That was big. But then when you became, you know, an ex-player, now you're off trying to make it in the world and you're trying to be successful, yeah, you get to know a little bit more. You get to see a little bit more. Your conversations go a little bit deeper than whether or not you're going to be ready to go on Saturday and did you go to class that week. Yeah, I think I know where David's going with that. And for me, staying in the athletics world as a worker, that allowed me even more access and more times that I might call on coach or want something or try and get his advice or just have someone to talk to about certain things. So, yeah, there was a big part of that because I was always encountering him in my job. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, National Football Foundation in New York City, or this was going on. And then, as you guys know, Coach got around pretty well to a lot of different places. You know, remember when Mike Ruzioni from the hockey team was America's guest?
Yes.
I think Coach did a pretty good imitation of that one. And people were always inviting him back to things because he left an imprint a lot of places between Iowa State, Pitt, Tennessee, Arkansas, right on down the line. People always want Coach back.
Charles, in regard to Coach Majors, we thought it was interesting. We interviewed Bobby, his brother, earlier, who said that Johnny tried to get him to go to Iowa State, and he said there was no way. He would have been too rough on me. I didn't want to play for my brother. But he also said –
that's a good thought.
He said two things. I asked him this. The two things that if you had to narrow it down, that made Coach Majors such a successful coach: his attention to detail and his demand for excellence. As someone that played for him, would you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. The attention to detail was – you know, everything that you did. I mean, there was times where he would talk to us about the pads that were left on the field after practice and go back and pick them up, picking up your locker room and policing up your area and having some respect and pride for it. Seems like a small thing, but there's a repetition in that as well. You know, he was, you know, just a listing every week of the chart who was going to the hotel, you know, for a home game or who was traveling. And believe me, even though I was a starter, I looked every week just to make sure. I wanted to make sure I was going. And those sorts of things. And I'll put it to you this way. I'll give you two quick ones. Well, I'll give you one quick one for sure. He called me in one time and made me sweat. You know how they, you know, coaches, you know, bosses make you sweat it out sitting there. I'm just sitting there just like, oh, God, I have no idea what this is about. And finally, you remember how coaches keep those index cards?
Yes.
In his shorts at practice? You always saw him writing notes. Well, in that John Major scrawl, he slid a card across. He had those glasses down at the end of his nose. Charles, read that card. So I'm reading. He goes, out loud. It's okay. And it said, remind yourself to chew Charles's ass about how he's playing cover two. That's what the card said. And I just looked up at him after I read it, and he goes, well, do you understand? And I was like, well, I'm supposed to. He goes, you don't understand. And he gets up, and he starts demonstrating what he wants. And then he, you know, that little crooked finger he had? And he gave me that crooked finger in my face, and he said, so you're going to start playing it the way I just told you, aren't you, young man? Yes, sir. Now get down. Let's get going now. Pick it up. Yes, sir. I went flying out of that office. And I don't think my feet hit the ground the rest of that entire practice. I know my roommate that night was like, dude, are you on something? I said, man, coach lit me up today. If I don't start getting it going, my butt's going to be on the bench. So I remember that well. I remember one time he jumped into our drills. And you guys remember when he came out of that tower, right? When you heard Coach on the loudspeaker, and let's be honest about it, when he yelled in the loudspeaker, what was the percentage of what we actually understood of what he said? 40% max? but you knew when he was ticked off, and you'd hear, Dennis, you're like, oh, shoot. And then your coach would go, if he comes out of that tower, I'm going to run you. And then he would come flying out of that tower. You know how it circles its way down, right? And what I always used to crack up about was he'd get to the bottom, and he'd have to take a few breaths because he's a little out of breath. And then he'd start back again to where he was going. And the whole field, everyone on all the fields were watching to see which direction he went. Because if he came in your direction, you're like, uh-oh. But if he went in the other direction, like, woo, we're off the hook. He's going somewhere else. And he came over one time, and he's like, what are you doing? I said, shut up. Just get out of the way. And he threw me out of the drill. And you remember when Coach wanted to demonstrate, what would he do first? He'd take that hat, and he'd turn it backwards.
Yeah.
Yep. And he'd turn the hat backwards, and he'd take the whistle and throw it behind his neck. And he's like, now I'm going to show you how to play this coverage. You don't know what you're doing out here. I used to coach the secondary, you know. Yes, sir. So I'm standing there. Run the play. And they ran the play. And, of course, the speed of it and everything. He didn't come anywhere near it, right? Run it again. So I promise you guys, he ran it three times and didn't come anywhere near demonstrating what he was trying to demonstrate. But, of course, I'm not going to be laughing. I'm standing there like, oh, God, right? Now, he is beyond ticked off at this point. He's 0-for-3, okay? He's mad at me because I can't get it right. And he turns around and he looks at me and announces to everyone in the vicinity, well, Charles, you effed up that coverage so badly, no one can play it, and turned and walked away.
Oh.
So there's your attention to detail, guys.
I got to ask about this. So what was it like the night you played Miami in the Sugar Bowl? What was that locker room like before you took the field?
Well, I think by now, if you're a Tennessee fan, and if you haven't, please find it. And it's not too hard to find, I don't believe, right? You have the locker room pregame speech, right, Coach Majors?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that may have been his finest hour because of this. Not because the speech was so good. And obviously the speech is good because of what? We won. You know how that is. It's like Ohio State fans still go back to Jim Tressel's talk before they beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl, right? But if they don't win the game, we don't know that he ever gave that talk, okay? But because you win, now those things get elevated. Well, it was still a terrific speech. Not because he wove in, you know, incredible eloquence and he brought in, you know, all these great quotes. It was the quiet confidence that he exhibited to our team, because he had been telling us the entire time we were good enough. And you guys remember going into that Miami game, we were probably, what, double-digit dogs? And that Miami team was supposed to roll us and then claim a national championship because Oklahoma and Penn State were playing in the Orange Bowl. And they had gone to Norman that year, Miami did, and beat the heck out of Oklahoma, broke Troy Aikman's ankle, and he never played another game at Oklahoma. And they went back to the wishbone with Jamel Holloway and rolled to the Orange Bowl. And then when they beat Penn State and we beat Miami, Oklahoma won another national title. And to this day, when I see Coach Switzer, he says the same thing every single time. Ah, Charlie, ha ha, won another one. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Because of what we did that night. So that was a big part. But what Coach did in that locker, if you watch that speech, you will not get, guys, we have to play a perfect game tonight. Guys, we can't make mistakes against this team. They're so good. We've got to play above ourselves. He didn't say that. What he told us that night and what he'd been building up to was, you're good enough to do this if you just play your game. Now, you guys have seen and heard that speech. You know what I'm talking about. There was never an element of, okay, guys, woo, we got a challenge tonight. No, it was, we're good enough to beat anyone in the country if we play our game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he had built us up to at that point, and he didn't take us above and beyond that night, because that would have been a mistake. It would have been contradicting everything he had taught us or told us in that month leading up to the game, and I thought he hit it really well that night in retrospect.
That's incredible. What was it like in terms of, was the approach any different when you played the quote-unquote big games? Alabama, which I guess you were, your first 3 years in Tennessee, you didn't see a loss to a, you weren't a
no,
part of a loss
no.
to the Crimson Tide. But was there any difference between the big game, so to speak, and just getting in preparations 1 week to the next?
He tried not to. He used to talk about Team X all the time. You got to treat each week like you're playing Team X. We used to laugh about that all the time. But you guys better be careful. That X is pretty good now. We used to, you know, Team X. They're always the same. But when he tried to keep it that way, but let's be honest about it. Anyone who tells you that you're treating, getting ready to play Auburn when they're number one, when you're getting ready to play Alabama any year, that you treat that the same as any other, that's a lie. Okay, there's just no getting around it. It's not. It doesn't mean that you've put in 37 different things that you wouldn't put in for other people, but how you go about it, what the intensity level is, right? You're trying to keep it grounded, and you're trying not to peak too early, but at the same time, you're going to tell me that getting ready for Wake Forest is the same as getting ready for Bama? We all know that's not true. It's just not the way it is, and that's the problem, because sometimes you're not ready, and Wake could jump up and bite you, right? You know, mm-hmm. Army got us a couple of times, that sort of a deal. But, yeah, for the most part, he tried to keep it that way. But a lot of that would happen, frankly, guys, in the off season. And you remember the year we beat Auburn. And, John, I got to tell you, the proud Vol, and you know, we're all tired of this Bama stuff because they're pretty darn good. I had a redshirt year, so I consider myself 4-for-5 against Bama. Okay?
Oh, well, yeah, you all sure right? are.
Yeah. All right, so let's make sure we get that part in there. Now the fifth one we don't want to talk about. Okay?
That's right. What fifth
that
one?
That one we're gonna let go because I think we were losing at halftime like 42-14, and it was so bad it felt like 92. And I remember sitting there and Coach snapped at the half. Right, and ordinarily he was very clinical at halftime, but he lost it. Forget going to your meet. Everybody up. And he said, do you know that they can score 70 points? And I remember sitting there going, well, heck, Coach, they got 42 in the first half. If you double it, that's 80. Yeah, they can score 70. And obviously you didn't say anything like that, but, you know, it's just one of those deals. But the way that he would get you going was really in the off season, because the year we beat Auburn when they were number one was the 85 when we went to the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That started, frankly, at the Sun Bowl in 84 in El Paso. I screwed up a coverage and got beat for a touchdown by Farrell Edmonds, okay, who later was a number one pick of the Dolphins. And I tried to always throw that in there to let you know he was pretty good. I wasn't just a scrub, okay? And I get beat for this touchdown. It was the worst chewing I ever got in my life at Tennessee. He met me at the hash mark coming off the sideline after they scored. And you know how Charlie Brown's teacher does that, womp, 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 womp?
Yes.
By the time we got to the sideline, that's all I heard, except for an occasional blankety blank, blank, you know, a couple of those slid through. And all my teammates, Tommy Sims, Terry Brown, all those guys, they slid way down the bench. And I got all the way to the bench. Coach chewed me all the way to the bench. I mean, just lit me up. And we get done with the whole thing. And Zook, Coach Ron Zook, comes running. He comes charging up at me. He wants a piece of me. And I threw my hand up at him and said, I'm just going to tell you straight up, I'm hanging on by a very thin thread. If you want me to, if you're going to bench me, then you can yell all you want. But if you want me to play, there's no more yelling. It's the only time I ever talk like that to a coach. And he actually didn't yell, and I played. Bottom line was, we get beat that day, guys. We get in the locker room after the game, and Coach Major says, seniors, thank you for your service. Good luck in life. Make sure you come back and see us. Make us proud. As for the rest of you, and I went, oh, boy, here it goes. He said, I will never coach a team like the one we had here. We're going to be tougher. We're going to be more physical. We're going to do this. He said, make sure you get in shape in your off-season winter conditioning programs. Make sure you go to class. He said, because, gentlemen, spring practice will be a bloodbath, I promise you. And he used the word bloodbath. And I went, well, there goes Christmas. And sure enough, we come back the next year, and spring practice, they introduced the new – remember the old gauntlet drill? Remember that one?
Yeah.
They introduced the gauntlet to us, which was an extended Oklahoma drill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we stretched. The first day of spring practice, we stretched and went right to gauntlet. And that was spring, the entire spring. 20 straight days of pads, beat each other to death, no 20-hour rule, none of that stuff, blah, blah, blah. How did it pay off? We were as physical as Auburn the next year. We beat Auburn. We go on. We win the SEC. So when you're asking about getting ready for the big game, he was getting ready for Auburn right then and there because he was tired of it. And I had heard a story that's unsubstantiated that Coach Dye, God bless his soul, we lost him on Monday, that apparently he told Coach Majors that we were as talented as his Auburn teams, but we just weren't as tough as his kids. And apparently Coach Majors went after him at a coach's meeting. They had to break it up.
I could see that.
But you could see that, right? Because you could see that bulldog jaw. And, you know, that's kind of one of those things. I can say that about my kids. But you can't say that about my kids.
Right.
And I don't know if the story is true or apocryphal, but I'd like to believe it was true or there was some truth to it. And he brought that back to us. So if you're asking how we got ready for big games, that was one way. You just did it in the off season.
Charles, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. We thank you for going down the road talking about the late Coach Majors. We're all going to miss him. What a great character he was, and we thank you for sharing stories with us.
Thanks for having me, and my heart goes out to Mrs. Majors and to John and Mary and their family, and all my best condolences to the Majors family. And yeah, I love Coach Majors. There's no getting around that. I absolutely love that man, and he's always going to be a huge part of my life.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
bye,
Charles.
Guys.
That's Charles Davis reliving his playing days under Coach Majors.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back to close out hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1 The Sports Animal with you wherever you go.
So sure enough, we're running just a bit late. We come back to actually say so long for hour number three of Sports Talk. But Jimmy Himes, we've got a lot more to get to. We look forward to catching up with David Cutcliffe as well as Mike Stoll as we remember and celebrate John Majors.
Yeah, we look forward to visiting with them, and we've had a great array of guests. We certainly appreciate their time as we really celebrate the life of Coach Majors and what a colorful life it was.
So the conversation continues, and we will have our trivia challenge. The Sports Fix at 6 is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.